Okay, so ready to dive into the world of Philema.
Absolutely.
You've shared some fascinating excerpts from Erotic Liberation, selected lectures on Philema, and it seems you're particularly drawn to how this system approaches personal liberation.
It's such a core concept in Thelema.
Yeah, and you even underlined this intriguing phrase, living in a world of orgasms. Now, I don't know about you, but that definitely piqued my curiosity.
It's a great example of how these lectures challenge conventional thinking right from the start.
For sure, for sure. So before we get to the, shall we say, climax of this exploration, let's set the stage. You've highlighted these two figures, Nuit and Hadit, as central to Thelema. The book describes them as representing fundamental principles that govern reality.
Yeah, it's almost like trying to understand the universe as this constant dance between, say, possibility and experience. Nuit being this infinite canvas of potential,
Yeah.
and Hadit, the spark of energy that brings it all into being.
Okay. I'm already starting to see how this connects to the idea of personal liberation. It's like if we can tap into that creative energy, that Hadit force within ourselves, we unlock a deeper level of freedom.
Exactly. And the lectures emphasize that this isn't some abstract esoteric concept.
Right.
It's about recognizing those forces at play in your own life, in every experience, even something as simple as spilling your coffee in the morning.
Right, now you're really speaking my language.
Yeah.
Spilled coffee is definitely a regular occurrence in my life. So how does Thelema help us approach those everyday moments with, say, a bit more orgasmic awareness?
Well, before we unpack that juicy metaphor, it's important to understand that Thelema isn't your typical self-help guide. It doesn't offer a set of rules or commandments. Instead, it's more about understanding these underlying principles that govern existence and then using that knowledge to navigate your own path.
So it's less about worshiping deities and more about recognizing these forces, these Nuit and Hadit energies within ourselves and the universe around us. It's starting to make sense, but I have to admit, when I hear magic mentioned in the context of Thelema, I immediately picture wands and spells, maybe a disappearing rabbit or two.
You're not alone. But the lectures actually break magic down into four distinct types. Predictive magic, like astrology, working with energy fields, ritual magic, and most intriguingly, what they call becoming magic itself.
Okay, you've got my attention. Becoming magic itself. I've got to know more about that. Before we get there, though, you also included some notes about the four stages of the Thelemic path: liberty, love, life, and light.
Ah, yes, this is where the rubber really meets the road, so to speak. Each stage represents a step towards embodying those Thelemic principles and unlocking deeper levels of personal liberation.
All right, let's break this down. Liberty is the first stage, right? What does it look like to embrace liberty in this context?
The lectures describe liberty as recognizing and breaking free from the limitations we impose on ourselves.
Okay, so it's about recognizing how we trap ourselves. I can relate to that.
It's about recognizing how we cling to our desires, our thoughts, even our suffering, mistaking them for our true selves.
So it's that classic idea of the ego, that it's not our true self, but this collection of stories and attachments we've built up over time. Is that what they're getting at?
Yes, but with an interesting twist. The lectures are careful to point out that it's not about destroying the ego entirely. They argue that the ego itself is a kind of misunderstanding, not something inherently bad that needs to be annihilated.
That's a really interesting distinction. So it's more about seeing the ego for what it is, this collection of thoughts and experiences, and recognizing that it's not the totality of who we are, like realizing you are not your car, even if you spend a lot of time in it.
And once we start to loosen the grip of those false identifications, we enter the second stage, love. And trust me, this isn't the Hallmark card version of love we're talking about.
Now that's interesting. Hallmark cards in Thelema don't exactly scream match made in heaven to me.
Yeah.
What's so different about this love stage? It sounds intense.
It is. The lectures describe it as this radical embrace of everything, a drive towards union with the entirety of existence. And I mean everything, not just the things we find pleasing or comfortable.
It's like we're talking about expanding our capacity for love beyond anything we could imagine. No wonder it follows the stage of breaking free from limitations. If we're still clinging to our narrow perspectives and judgments, that kind of all-encompassing love wouldn't even be possible, right?
Exactly. And the lectures suggest that this love isn't passive either. It's an active force represented by the ritual of Lieber Resch, which you were curious about.
Oh, yes, I remember underlining that one. Tell me more about this Lieber Resch thing. What's the connection to love?
Well, this ritual involves connecting with the sun, as a symbol of that powerful, all-encompassing love.
So we're talking about a daily practice of aligning oneself with this potent, life-giving force. And this is where things start to get really interesting. So last time we left off with this idea of Libra Rush, a thelemic practice of connecting with the sun. And you were about to explain how it embodies this intense, all-encompassing love we were discussing.
Exactly. It's a daily ritual, actually.
Yeah.
The lectures mention performing it 4 times a day, aligning yourself with the sun's energy as a way to cultivate and embody that expansive, active love. It's like a constant reminder of this journey towards liberation and a tangible way to connect with those thelemic principles.
Aligning yourself with the sun 4 times a day. Wow, that's commitment. I'm lucky if I remember to have my morning coffee. But I can see how it ties into this idea of love as an active force. It's not just a feeling, it's something you embody, something you practice. Okay, so we've covered liberty and love. You also included a note about the third stage of the thelemic path, life. What does it mean to experience life through this thelemic lens?
This is where it gets really interesting, even a bit paradoxical. The lectures suggest that the stage is about recognizing that even limitations, those things we perceive as obstacles, are actually opportunities for growth. It's about shifting our perspective to see challenges not as roadblocks, but as stepping stones on the path.
Okay, so it's not about trying to eliminate challenges or pretend they don't exist. It's about seeing them as integral parts of the journey. I can get behind that. It's like that saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But instead of just surviving, we're learning to thrive in the midst of those challenges.
Exactly. And this ties back to that metaphor of living in a world of orgasms. Remember, we're not just talking about physical pleasure here. It's about experiencing the totality of life with all its ups and downs as a manifestation of those fundamental forces, those Nudi and Hadid energies we discussed earlier.
It's about finding a sense of joy and even ecstasy in every experience, even the ones that are initially painful and challenging. That's a pretty radical way of looking at things, but I can see how it connects to this idea of personal liberation. If we can find a way to embrace everything life throws at us, we tap into a deeper level of freedom.
Precisely. And when we reach that point of embracing the totality of our experience, that's when we enter the final stage, light.
So it's not like a sudden flash of enlightenment, but rather a gradual unfolding of awareness that comes from consistently applying these principles, from embracing those stages of liberty, love, and life.
Exactly. The lectures describe light as a state of profound understanding, a kind of illumination that arises from integrating those previous stages into your being.
Wow, that's quite a journey. You also highlighted the Gnostic Mass in your notes. I have to admit, rituals always intrigue me. What's the connection between Thelema and the Gnostic Mass?
The Gnostic Mass is considered a central ritual in Thelema. The lectures describe it as a celebration of truth, both internal and external. It's like a microcosm of the universe, a way to experience those Thelemic principles we've been discussing in a tangible, multisensory way.
Okay, so walk me through this. What are some of the key elements in this ritual, and how do they relate to these concepts of Nuit and Hadit, or those 4 stages of the path?
One of the central symbols in the Gnostic Mass is the priestess, who represents the cosmic feminine, the embodiment of Nuit, that field of all possibilities we were discussing earlier.
And there's also a priest, right? Does the priest represent Hadit, that spark of creative energy?
That's a great observation. The lectures don't explicitly state that, but there's definitely a symbolic resonance there. The priest undergoes a series of transformations during the ritual, almost like a symbolic journey through those stages of liberation we discussed.
Oh, that's fascinating. So it's not just a passive ceremony. There's actual movement and transformation happening within the ritual space. It's like a performance, a play that's enacting these thelemic principles.
Exactly. It's about experiencing those principles, not just intellectually, but also through the body, through action, through that shared ritual space.
You mentioned that the priest undergoes a kind of transformation. What does that look like?
Well, at the beginning of the ritual, the priest is symbolically dead, trapped within the tomb of his limitations. He's kind of stuck in that pre-liberty stage, if you will.
Okay, I'm hooked. Yeah. So how does he break free from this symbolic tomb?
Well, that's where the priestess comes in. She awakens him, symbolizing that initial spark of recognition, that awakening to the possibility of something more. That's the spark of Hadit igniting within him, propelling him on his journey.
It's like she's initiating him onto the path of liberation, and then what happens?
Throughout the ritual, the priest interacts with various symbols, each one representing different aspects of the thelemic path.
You mentioned some of the symbols earlier, like the lance and the chalice. What do those represent?
Those are great examples. The lance, traditionally the phallic symbol, represents the priest's will, his directed energy. It's that Hadit force in action.
And the chalice.
The chalice, a feminine symbol, represents his capacity for love and acceptance. That receptive, nurturing energy we associate with Nuit. It's about finding that balance between willpower and receptivity.
It's like he's learning to wield his will in a way that's aligned with the natural flow of the universe. He's integrating those masculine and feminine principles within himself. Mm-hmm. So he's moving through those stages we talked about earlier, liberty, love even, life, facing those challenges and learning from them. But what about that final stage light? How does that play out in the ritual?
Well, the ritual culminates in this act of union between the priest and the priestess, symbolizing that ultimate goal of uniting with the divine, of achieving that state of illuminated awareness.
Wow, that's powerful. And this entire drama is playing out in front of the congregation, who are also participating in the ritual.
Exactly. The Gnostic Mass is designed to be a communal experience, a way for individuals to connect with these principles, not just intellectually, but also through their senses and emotions. It's a shared journey toward liberation, guided by these potent symbols and actions.
It seems incredibly immersive, like you're stepping out of your everyday life and into the symbolic realm where these universal principles are made manifest.
And the lecture suggests that the power of the ritual lies in its ability to transmit these truths on a level that transcends language.
It's tapping into something primal, something that resonates deep within us beyond words and concepts.
Exactly. And one of the most intriguing details from the lectures is this idea that even inanimate objects like paint or music have their own will that artists collaborate with.
That's a mind-bending concept. You're saying it's not just the artist imposing their will on the canvas, but rather a dialogue, a dance between the artist's intention and the inherent qualities of the medium itself.
Precisely. The artist taps into that creative force, that Hadith energy, and channels it through their chosen medium.
So art, in a sense, becomes a vehicle for channeling these deeper truths, just like the ritual itself.
That's a fascinating connection. And speaking of art, we were just talking about this mind-blowing idea that even art supplies have their own will. You were saying that artists tap into this creative force, this Hadith energy, and channel it through their chosen medium. It reminds me of something you highlighted earlier, this comparison between a great work of art and a magical talisman.
Yes. Both a work of art and a talisman serve as vessels transmitting meaning and significance to those who experience them.
So when we engage with a powerful work of art, we're not just passively observing it. We're entering into a kind of dialogue with those deeper forces, those Nuit and Hadith energies that infuse the very fabric of reality. Exactly. And that brings us to a crucial point that the lectures emphasize. The lema isn't about blindly following dogma or accepting someone else's interpretation of truth.
Right.
It's about cultivating your own understanding through personal experience and exploration.
That resonates with me. It's like we've been given this map, this system of thought, but we have to go out and explore the territory for ourselves.
Precisely. And the Gnostic Mass, with its rich symbolism and multifaceted layers of meaning, provides a framework for that exploration. Mm. It's a starting point for your own journey of discovery.
So we've explored these scholemic principles, these stages of the path, the symbolism of the Gnostic Mass. But what does it actually look like to live a life that's aligned with thelema outside of the ritual context? How do we take those insights, that sense of connection and liberation, and integrate them into our everyday lives?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lectures suggest that one way is to cultivate an awareness of the interplay between Nuit and Hadith in every aspect of our experience.
So it's about seeing those forces at play, not just in grand cosmic events, but also in the mundane details of our daily lives.
Exactly. For example, remember that analogy of the car with wobbly wheels?
How could I forget? That one really stuck with me. It's such a relatable way to illustrate the importance of aligning with one's true will.
Exactly. When we're not in alignment with our true will, life feels like a bumpy ride. But when we're living in accordance with that deeper purpose, things seem to flow more effortlessly. We're driving with aligned wheels, so to speak.
I love that. And that brings us back to that deliciously provocative metaphor of living in a world of orgasms. I'm starting to understand it as more than just a catchy phrase. It's about experiencing that state of flow, that effortless alignment with our true will that arises when we embrace the totality of our experience.
You're getting it. The lecture suggests that this state of acceptance isn't passive. It's an active engagement with reality, a willingness to confront both the light and shadow aspects of ourselves and the world around us.
It's about finding that balance between embracing pleasure and acknowledging pain, recognizing that both are integral parts of the human experience.
Yeah.
It's about showing up for all of it, the good, the bad, and everything in between with a sense of radical acceptance.
Beautifully said. And the lectures emphasize that this process of embracing our totality is a journey, not a destination. It's not about achieving some static state of perfection, but rather about continuously refining our understanding of ourselves and the universe.
It's about embracing the journey itself with all its twists and turns as the real destination. It's like we're always a work in progress, always evolving and becoming more fully ourselves.
I love that. And the Gnostic Mass serves as a reminder of that ongoing journey, a symbolic representation of the cycles of creation and destruction that are constantly unfolding within and around us.
It's like a compass guiding us back to that sense of connection and purpose when we feel lost or disconnected. It's a reminder that we're not alone on this journey. We're part of something much larger than ourselves.
And that, I think, is the beauty of Thelema. It's a system of thought that encourages us to question assumptions, to explore the depths of our own being, and to find our own unique path to liberation.
It's about becoming the artists of our own lives, collaborating with the universe to create something meaningful and beautiful. And as we wrap up this deep dive into Thelema, I'm left with this sense of possibility, this sense of excitement to explore these ideas further and see how they can inform my own life.
And that's exactly what I hope you take away from this deep dive. It's not about giving you all the answers, but about sparking your curiosity, giving you some new lenses through which to view your own experience.
It's about empowering you to ask your own questions, explore your own path, and discover your own unique expression of Thelema. And on that note, we'll leave you with this final provocative thought. If, as these lectures suggest, the path to liberation lies in embracing the totality of our experience, how might you start to infuse your own life with that sense of radical acceptance and joyous engagement? That's something to chew on, isn't it?
It certainly is. And remember, the journey itself is the destination. So embrace the ride and see where it leads you.